Kilauea K284AL Halaiva K224CQ in beautiful Moloa'a. It's time right now for In the Garden on the Farm. Right now.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Yes. It's a beautiful thing. Shall we do the show? Oh, hey, Robin's on. I think I'm going to do the intro, though.
Great.
Hey, let's do the intro to the show. Okay. Aloha. Aloha, everyone, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we're going to celebrate the opening of a new farmer's market on Kauai's east side. Don our lab coats and peer into the technical art of micropropagation. We'll also ponder the importance of pH. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is responsible for this program. The reason this show is happening is because of listeners just like you and your support, as well as the support of our very generous underwriters. Let's hear all about them.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda Garden and Lawn Equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday. More information at 246-4769. That's 246-GROW and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
And thanks again to our wonderful underwriters. And aloha, Robin.
Aloha, and thanks to our listeners and certainly all the people with their hands in the land today, hopefully taking a little break to listen to your local garden show. We're happy to be here with you.
We are. And we were having a laugh because I put on a different sound effect for our intro, which was actually the burbling of a beautiful mountain stream that I recorded yesterday, which sounded great before we actually plugged it into the board, but then it sounded like a toilet that was running. So that was part of the reason we were so discombobulated at the beginning of the show. But I suppose the sound of a flushing toilet or the sound of a burbling stream are both pleasant, calm sounds that reinvigorate us for gardening and farming activities.
Water, water everywhere.
We've got a great show and some special guests with us today, so we're going to kick it right off with our celestial session. Right before then, we do want to encourage folks to continue to support KKCR. You can donate any time of year, and we're really grateful for that. KKCR.org, donation opportunities all over that page, so please consider giving us your support today. So today, we will head over to our Hawaiian Moon reading for the day, thanks to the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar. From the Hanalei Watershed Hui, you can get your own beautiful copy of that by calling Maka'ala at the Hui office. 826-1985 is the number. And today's Hawaiian moon is Muku. And this is the very final moon of the month on the 30th day. It doesn't always come around, but it is here with us this month. Muku rose over Kauai at 6:47 a.m. this morning. She will reach her transit or highest point in the sky during our show today at 12:45 p.m. and she'll set at 6:46 p.m. tonight. 0%, as the English would say, of this moon's face is illuminated, which means we can't see it at all, because today is new moon, and it is getting dark tonight at about 6:23 p.m. So if you want to get some final work out there, get it done by then. Muku is the 30th night of the moon, as I said, when it has entirely disappeared. It also means to cut short, shortened, amputated, at an end, or ceased, anything that is short, brief. It's also a measure of length from fingertips of one hand to the elbow of the other arm. And it's said that bananas that are planted today will be that length, muku. It's also the broken section of a wave or crest. And so planting recommendations today, mai'a, ko, sugarcane, and other trees are good. It is said it's not recommended for planting uala or sweet potato today.
Yes, maybe the sweet potatoes would be invisible.
Yes, which we don't want, and so often happens, it seems, when we plant the vines.
Sure, yeah, we don't like invisible sweet potatoes. We like them, and they're big and plump.
Big and fat.
Well, yes, new moon today in Aquarius, 2 p.m. We're in the ascending moon phase right now, although today in the biodynamic look at things is an unproductive moon in Aquarius, but by tomorrow at 10 a.m., moon in Aquarius, an air sign, making it time to work with our flower plants or vegetatively propagating some plants. Cuttings do really well on air signs in the ascending moon. So we get a few rounds at that. We'll get another one next week. Friday and Saturday, the moon's in Pisces, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants. And the sun will move into Aries in midday on Sunday, so that's a fire sign, making it time to work with our fruit plants, but it will give us the first half of the day off as unproductive, and then we move into that. And Monday, Tuesday next, also unproductive, so there's been some unproductive aspects going on. Some of them have to do with the nodes of the moon, other ones with different conjunctions related to planets and the moon. So kind of a light week, maybe a good time to get some compost together for your spring garden.
Yes, and want to let folks know we're having our third Saturday work party out at the community food forest this Saturday. Big meal, fun. We're going to be digging holes for planting, so bring your digging implements, and we're just going to have a good time prepping holes for planting when we can choose those most auspicious days, as we do by combining the Hawaiian knowledge along with the biodynamic knowledge too.
Yeah, you know, that's so wise sometimes, and you have the motivation to actually get the prep done isn't necessarily the same day as planting, and often we want to put in amendments. And I know some people, myself maybe less than others, but I like to let the amendments kind of hang out in the hole and yep. break down a little and get ready for when the planting is there. So when you can work it out that way, that works really great.
Fantastic. And we'll be talking about pH later in the show, and that's certainly a process that takes some time. We have some very quick acting pH amendments and ones that take longer, so we'll talk a little bit about that at the end of the hour. But right now we're joined in studio by our good buddy Adam Asquith, tarot farmer extraordinaire, as well as a conservation biologist and educator. And he's here to share some very good news with us about what's going on over there in Kalia on the east side. Thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank you, KKCR, for providing the opportunity for shows like this. And you guys here in the studio doing all the work to make this information available to the public. It's I know how much time you guys put in and preparing for these shows, so it's not just like you guys show up and turn on the the board. So thank you very much for all you do and providing the opportunity. So.
Yeah, sure. Adam, as a fellow programmer, I'm sure you know you probably put a fair amount of time preparing for your show, too.
You do, and it shows. You guys do a great job, so we all appreciate it very, very much. Yeah.
Mahalo.
Yeah.
So what's the good news?
The good news is we just started last week a new farm market associated with our farm in Kealia. So, and really, so I'm here not so much to promote the market, but tangentially, I want to promote our farmers because, as I'll explain, our market is a little bit different than most of them. So we just started. Our market is open on Mondays and Fridays as the Pauhana market from 3 to 6. And it took me almost a year working with Kaina Hull in the planning department to develop the permit for both the market and some tours that are associated with the farm also. So a shout out to Kaina, super supportive, as was all the planning department and the planning commission, because they understand that real farmers like the ones we have, you know, struggle just barely to pay the bills. So any assistance they can provide on, you know, other ways to generate income or easier ways to deliver our products to the consumers, they're super supportive of. So much thanks to them for supporting what we've been trying to do. So we just started last week. And as you guys know, the history, I've been farming with my partners at Kealia for about 6 or 7 years and kind of went, you know, rolled with the punches and the changes in the land and the development and the downside and so forth. So, we have a good long-term tenure on the land. So we're like on our fourth or fifth landowner down there, but we just keep farming away. We're inviting in other farmers so we could diversify outside of Taro and some of the cattle operations that we have down there. And so our anchor farmers have been Hannah and James Huang. They've been down there since we've been there for almost 6 years. And so they've just done a fantastic job on the farm and for themselves and to their customers. They're just spectacular farmers.
Sure, they have well-loved farmers market booths.
Absolutely, yeah. That said, right, watching them and talking with them about the struggles of both the farming part and then running around to the markets, you know, it was always our dream to have our own market, right, so they don't have to basically divide and conquer, which is what they do. I mean, basically James spends most of his time on the farm and Hannah runs around to every market she can, right? So we're always dreamed of having our kind of our own market where you get to farm all day and then just, you know, walk all your stuff over to the market on site, and basically we're there, right? So Hannah and James have been with us, and I got to tell you guys a story about when they first started with us, because you know, they had nothing like most of us. I mean, like nothing except some hand tools, and we cleared a place for them, and they planted all that out, and they asked for a little bit more area, and one of my piece of equipment was down, and it took me about 2 or 3 weeks to get it started so I could go clear all the guinea grass for them. So I go driving over there one day on my bulldozer, looking around, and they're not there, and I'm thinking, I wonder where they want me to clear exactly. So I start driving through the guinea grass, and from the top of the bulldozer I look down and I see these fully developed zucchini plants with zucchini on them in the middle of the guinea grass.
Wow.
And I'm like, son of a gun. They couldn't wait. I mean, they went out there with OO bars and weed whackers and just like cleared little pockets in the guinea grass, planted, and were hand watering.
Wow.
I'm like, wow. So people like Hannah and James, who are so dedicated, right? It's you know, I do everything I possibly can to help their efforts. And it's worked. I mean, Hannah and James have been spectacularly successful. They develop, you know, devoted customers and deliver just the very best produce.
And sure, the beauty of a farm market like that is you just can't get fresher produce.
Yep, exactly.
You know, for the chefs of the island who are always looking for the freshest food they can find, to be able to go buy produce that was literally harvested, you know, 100 yards away an hour ago is about as good as it gets.
Exactly. And so, you know, what we've just done is kind of expanded our relationship with Hannah and James to other farmers. And so what we've tried to develop is a farm market instead of a farmer's market. So what people will find at our farm market is only things that are produced at Kealia Farm and by Kealia farmers. Because for Hannah and James, for example, rent a place up in Kapahi and have about an acre up there where they can grow sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes don't really do very well on our soils down at the bottom. But So it's a bit of an exclusive market like that, because we don't want to tempt people to go to Costco and fill out their table from produce other than what they're producing. So right. What we're trying to offer to people is an absolute real farm market, right? Mm. That you can, and there will be opportunities for people to go out on the farm, see where Hannah and James grow, how they grow, what's being produced. So it's an honest to God, you know, nothing from Costco or nothing from Asahi's. And we've extended that relationship. We brought in almost about 12 new farmers in the last 6 months. We've got
awesome.
the Thai farmers, Sufasit and Virat. If you're, Sufasit goes by BM. Most people will know him by BM. And they've been farming in Kalia for a year or two now on the other side of the river in Keapana. But they've opened up areas. We've got Villamore and VC Ibanez, who are older Filipino couple who actually grew up in the Filipino camps at Kealia when the when it was still. So they have a long history there, because of course at that time they, each house was growing all its food right within that camp. But the dedication is just spectacular. We brought in the Lin family, which is a Chinese couple, friends of Hannah and James. Uncle George Ornelas, the Ornelas Cowie family, who are Kama'aina to Kealia, going back, you know, long time. He's got a little cool little Hawaiian homestead kind of a thing up, where he's got a little pig operation and, you know, kind of traditional Hawaiian vegetables and stuff. We've got younger folks. We've got Kerry Tinsley, who's been through a couple of different programs. He's opened up an area and got some spectacular kale and greens, and they're all pulling off just spectacular produce, because we're so blessed with the unusual soils we have at Kealia. So they're typical alluvial soils like you find here in Hanalei and so forth, but highly buffered. So this would be apropos to the discussion later about pH, because the plantation did farm down there. They've been out of there for 20 or 25 years. But when they did farm, they ripped with their dozers and brought up the lower calcareous beach sand in Kealia. But what it did is buffer it. So our pH, our soil pHs in Kealia vary from about 7.2 to 7.8. And so I'm watching Kerry pull off these just ridiculous kale. And he puts nothing in the soil. I mean, you know, he mulches on top to keep the weeds down, but it's just, like, mind-blowing. So everybody's just so excited.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a great place to try spinach. True spinach really likes alkaline soils, which aren't that, as you said, not that prevalent so much.
In fact, some of the areas I've kind of restricted to some of the other crops that I know do a little bit better, because some of the pH at 7.7, anything above 7.5, you know, many crops just won't make it at all. Yeah. So it's good. I did not know that spinach liked alkaline soil. So what I've been doing some pumpkins and watermelons that seem to do okay in some of the alkaline soils too. So we've got another one of our farmers is Gary Yamamoto, third generation Japanese family farmer whose family goes back to Anahola. Most people don't know it, but the bottom of Anahola, right next to the beach park, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, that was a thriving Japanese farming community. So, and his family was famous for their watermelons in Anahola. So he's brought that, and so he grows the, you know, 50, 60 pounders. And then we've got the Thai farmers who are producing their smaller Thai watermelons. So.
Oh, those little sweeties.
Yeah,
they're good.
They're little sweeties, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So really what we're trying to do is promote our farmers, because it's their market. And I think they'll do well, because it's, you know, there won't be 10 tables with eggplant on it, right? So people are giving away their eggplant by the end of the day. It's, you know, Villamore and VC are probably the only ones that are going to grow eggplant. So it's more likely they'll be able to sell.
Well, right, because you're working in community with
That's
one another.
Right.
You cannot overlap so much. You can all decide as a group.
Exactly, exactly.
It's brilliant.
If they're going, oh, wow, Kerry's kale is so good, I'm going to bother planting kale. You go for it, boy. Yeah. And so I think it's an opportunity for them to work farm as a community a little bit differently, focusing on that market. Now they'll, you know, some of them are cranking. They'll still go to. You'll still be able to find Hannah and James at the Puhi Market on Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. But hopefully, if we're successful and we develop, they won't have to run around quite as much as they as they have.
What a beautifully supportive environment. Indeed. Way to pull that together and sort of make that happen, Adam.
Hope so. That's our goal. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear about the tour aspect, because you're beginning descriptions just are tantalizing me. Before you do, though,
sure.
Where is the market located?
Oh, yeah. So the farm is Kealia Farm. It's in the flats in that flat area, Mauka of Kealia Beach. You can't see it because it's all hidden.
So it's not where the green pig
is? No, that is Auntie Lihui Kinimaka's area. So, and she did a few, several years ago, she had a
market there
on Sundays. And, yes. And it didn't do too well. It's mostly kind of a vendor market. So that's the other thing that I want to emphasize to people is what we're really focusing on is for the local community. You know, we don't, Kealia soils, for example, don't support fruit trees very well. So you won't see the diversity of fruits at our market, right? So, but also that's okay. We're not focused on visitors. Most of the locals are going to have some kind of fruit tree in their yard anyway, but they're probably not growing kale, for example. So anyway, it's a little bit further Mauka along Kealia Road than where the green pig is. In fact, just about, you can walk, it's about 100 yards Mauka along Kealia Road from the green pig. So just before you start up the hill to Spalding Monument, there's the last little remnant of the plantation architecture there. It was the motor pool. There's a little gravel yard and kind of an open, and it's really cool because it's not an open market. It's a lanai. So everybody is on concrete pad with a roof line overhead. We've got Hawaiian music playing, so you can hang out. We'll have picnic tables and stuff, and we've got arrangements with some kitchens. So we've got some of our vendors are doing value-added product and some food. We've got, you know, grilled ahi on a bed of kale. We've got poi and lau lau. So we're trying to focus on the local community. Time-wise, also, right? So we want to make sure that a lot of people don't have time to get breakaway during the day to go to some of the midday markets. So we want to make sure that people, when they're Pauhana working and on their way home, they got time to.
Right. Tell us again what time it is exactly.
From 3 to 6.
3 to 6.
On Mondays and Fridays.
Cool. Yeah. So now how are you going to wrap this tour experience into it all and not get in the farmer's way?
So that's a good point. So for the market, we're trying to serve our local community. The tours, we're trying to serve our visitors. Developing a couple of different tours. We have a walking tour, which is an agricultural tour, focusing on the culture. I'm trying to explain to people the history of Kealia, what the land is, who's farmed it, and what we farmed, how that has created us as a community. So it's really more of a kind of a historical, cultural tour. Then we've got, and it's a long tour, so it's only for adults. Then we've got this cool wagon that we pull around on a tractor, which is more kind of a family tour. We just pull people up and show them, here's the taro patch, here's taro, here's Hannah and James kale, this is how they grow organic, things like that. So we try to minimize the interference with the farmers, but also, you know, that's farmers like Hannah and James who work the markets, they interface with the public. They understand that that's part of doing business as kind of a local small farmer. You've got to interface with the public, whether it's hustling your kale or sharing your life with visitors.
Right on.
Sure. Beautiful. And are the tours available during the same hours as market? What's their timing?
Yeah, as we start, you know, in the first month or so, we're going to start offering tours to people who come and purchase something from the market just because it's going to be local folks to start with. So we want to be able to share, you know, our lives and the abundance of Kealia with folks so that they understand who we are and who's down there and who's farming. And it's a beautiful spot. You know, we're so fortunate and so blessed to have our tenure there. We want to share not only the bounty of what we've produced, but also the joy of the actual production, right? Just such a gorgeous place. Go down there in the evenings and there's 40 or 50 nene. As long as you're trying to not plant sweet corn, they're okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Adam Asquith. He's telling us all about the new farm market there in Kealia Valley, bringing together the beauty and the productivity of the soils, the techniques of people really from around the world, but a lot of local cultural knowledge being employed there, and it sounding like an amazing marketplace happening on Mondays and Fridays from 3 to 6 p.m. They're off of the highway at Kealia Mauka and on Kealia Road.
Yeah, just look for the big red wagon.
Look for the big
red wagon.
Yeah. Sounds really great. Are you able to stay with us for
the
remainder?
Sure, I'd love
of the
to
show?
Talk. If we could talk about pH, that's a great interest of mine. So.
Great, fantastic. Well, we are going to get to that a bit later in the show.
That's okay.
But right now, we're going to prepare ourselves for our next special guest who's going to call in maybe about 5 minutes or so. And we want to crack open the discussion of micropropagation. We're focusing in on propagation of all types this month. We'll be getting into some more of the vegetative propagation skills that you can use at home without too much specialized technique or equipment next week. But this week, because we had an opportunity to speak with somebody who's on the road to setting up his own micropropagation system, we wanted to tackle this one today. So we are talking today about a methodology also known as tissue culturing. And oftentimes people have the image of plants growing in a test tube. In aseptic culture, it brings to mind people in lab coats and lots of sterile surfaces and dust hoods and all kinds of specialized equipment.
Safety goggles.
So let's get down to the basics and talk about why we might choose to use this particular propagation method, because it is pretty complex.
It is. And one of my favorite reasons is to save rare plants that are beyond reproduction. When I studied tissue culture 20 years ago when I was in school at Rutgers, I was lucky enough to work with a Russian woman who worked at the Botanical Garden of Kiev and personally saved a palm tree that was so old and so rare it was beyond reproduction, and it was the last one, like literally. Right. And by taking a slice of the leaf, she was able to culture the cells from that plant and grow up another plant, literally saving it from extinction. And I think that that's a beautiful reason alone to practice tissue culture. Sometimes we just don't realize that we want another one of those before it's too late.
Right.
And in the case of that plant, she was able to make more of them that were able to reproduce. Very interesting.
Beautiful and worthwhile reason. And so much thanks to Nelly Sujii at Lion Arboretum, who keeps many hundreds of critically endangered species alive in her micropropagation facility, as well as all of the cultivars of kalo. And I think she's bringing other of the cultural crops into cultivation in that fashion as well. So this is used in rare plant rescue or conservation, but it's also used widely by the commercial industry and is used for other reasons. One of the interesting ones would be to actually promote the growth of plants that otherwise would not survive when a fertilization event happens, that sometimes plants within the same genus, intergeneric plants within a close relation to each other, that nature doesn't allow to produce a viable seed, that the young embryonic seed can be grown into that hybrid, essentially. So that's used a lot in the ornamental industry. And certainly there are applicabilities to grow other plants from seed that are very difficult to grow from seed, and one of those would be the whole family of orchids, given the fact that orchid seed does not have a storage mechanism for the growth of the plant and can depend on environmental associations that are very difficult to reproduce in a propagation environment, so an artificial propagation environment like a greenhouse. And so by growing them on a media that has nutrient solution in it, in the laboratory, small orchid plants can be grown successfully and represent new crosses and new varieties that are developed.
Absolutely. It also quickly produces mature plants. Once you are able to grow up your cell mass of the plant, and we'll talk about more details of how it's grown into a plant from there, but you get a mature plant much more quickly. There's also disease-free bananas are made through tissue culture now with bunchy top virus just making more and more of a mark on banana plantings all over the world. One of the ways to get disease-free bananas is to buy them from, well, I know one company in Florida called AgriStarts that tissue cultures flats of banana plants that can be purchased, and they're 100% guaranteed disease-free. So it's a way to get clean planting stock is something that tissue culture does for our world as well.
Crucial. So methods of propagation do include creating small plantlets, growing up seeds, growing up masses called callus, which is undifferentiated cells of the plant that can be used to just indefinitely and slowly conserve the plant. It's kind of like putting a seed into a jar. If some of the methods will rapidly produce a plant, so in some cases we want to just inch along as slowly as possible through callus formation to preserve the genetic integrity of the plant as well. In some cases, however, genetic mutants can be spawned, and so that's something that needs to be a mindfully watched for, especially in the conservation of rare species.
Sure, and you know, skilled tissue culturalists are able to know exactly what kind of explant is the plant of choice that you're choosing to tissue culture. You know exactly what part of that plant to take and how to create this callus of undifferentiated cells. It's one of the most fascinating things to me about plants is that each cell is almost like a stem cell. And depending on what kind of hormones are given to the plant, it will either produce shoots or roots, and you can grow a whole plant after you've grown up this mass of undifferentiated cells, so they haven't become anything just yet. And the different hormones used, cytokinin is generally what's used on the media to make shoots, and auxins, which we'll talk about a little bit more next week, is the hormone that's used to produce roots.
And right now, I'd like to welcome our next special guest to the show. Returning to the show with us is Neil Sands of Orchid Alley, who, along with his wife, Faye Lee, have been growing and selling award-winning orchids for 16 years now, I guess it is. They've won many awards, and their store, Orchid Alley, is located in historic Kapa'a Town. He graced our studio last March with a breathtaking assortment of orchids in full bloom, and today he joins us via phone. Neil, are you with us?
I'm definitely here.
Hey, it's great to hear from you.
Yes, that's good to be back. Good to be back. I missed you guys.
We miss you as well. We miss your beauty and all the beauty that surrounds you on a regular basis.
So I wish I could have come up and brought you some samples of some flasking media and materials that we have, but I wasn't able to make it up there this time around.
Hey, well, we're happy to have you on the phone. And Robin tells me that you're delving into the world of micropropagation.
Yeah, we are in the sense of with orchids, which is it's our specialty there. So we're doing a couple different things. We're hybridizing orchids, and we are also what's called selfing orchids, which is taking an orchid and putting seed on itself, and that creates the same plant, but we can genetically keep it going. So if we're selfing a plant, it's usually a pretty nice plant that we want the traits of that plant to continue, instead of looking for the genetic diversity that you look at when you hybridize.
Sure, that's one great reason to use tissue culture is to keep a stellar variety going when otherwise you might not be able to. So tell us a little bit about your system and how it works, if you can explain a little bit in words what it would look like to tissue culture an orchid.
Yeah, it starts with pollination. So what we, unless you're cloning, which is another avenue you can take, but typically what we're doing, and I'm just now setting up my own lab at our nursery, so you know, next year, if you want to have a continuing talk, we might have more experience in creating all of our products. But currently, we start with usually taking two stellar plants and looking at their traits. And, for instance, right now I'm looking at trying to create some more pastel shades of color in the Vandacea species. And the Vandas are the big flower.
I love Vandas.
They're gorgeous. And that's an area where the hybridizing hasn't gotten too extreme yet. There's a lot of hybridization done to make blue of blues, bigger bigs, purple of purplers, or purples, pardon me. Even in the reds, but the pastels into the pinks, the light pastel greens, the yellows, that's kind of the area I'm trying to go into because it hasn't been done yet. And so we could maybe be the pioneers in that color of Vandas.
Do you mean in Hawaii or worldwide?
Well, that'd be worldwide, yeah.
Wow.
The market out there for orchids is worldwide. It's a worldwide orchid. And the judging system is worldwide as well. So when you get an awarded plant, it's not just your local. You can get a blue ribbon at your local orchid society, but if you get an awarded one, which is an American Orchid Society Award of Merit or a high quality, then those go into a national magazine, and you're meeting a criteria of judgment that is very strict. And so it makes those plants desirable worldwide. So that opens up a worldwide market. So when you're breeding, that's probably the ultimate goal, is to get plants that are so stellar that they can win awards, and then they are desirable not only locally, but they're desirable worldwide.
Wow, fantastic.
So, Neil, how do you get two different orchids to marry one another in a flask?
Well, this is Orchid Sex 101, and you marry them outside of the flask. So what happens with the orchids is we will put the pollen into the female portion of a similar genetic plant. And so they have to be genetically similar. You can't breed like a Phalaenopsis with a Papilio-petalum, but you can breed different types of Papilio-petalums with each other, different types of Phalaenopsis with each other, and Vandaceous with other Vandaceous. So once you do that, you selected what you want to create, you set the seed. It takes, depending on the variety, 3 months to almost a year for the seed pod to swell up to a point where you can harvest the seed. And from there, you go into the tissue culture, you go into an agar material in a sterile lab or a sterile environment where you're placing the seeds in this agar, similar to the way a doctor would test you for strep throat or would create a sterile environment to take any type of a culture from a human. It's very similar to that. So you're growing them in this media, and you do that under light for another 6 months to a year, and they start growing out looking like little bits of lettuce. And oftentimes if there's too many in there, they do something which is called replating. And the ideal amount usually in one of these flasks is, I think they call them flasks because they used to use whiskey bottles originally for when they started doing this. And the ideal number is about 40 to 50 plants per flask. Some people even like as few as 25. And so from your initial seed pod, you could be getting 10,000 seeds. So you're trying to get it down to usable numbers that are in the 25 to 50 plant per flask range, and then they send them out to us. Once they've sent them out, you have what looks like a bunch of tiny bits of lettuce or grass. You grow it, you acclimate it towards your environment that's going to go into for another 3 or 4 weeks. And then it's time to plant them out into tiny little 2-inch pots.
Awesome.
So that's just the process to get you to a little plantlet that's normal. So orchids are slow growing, very slow growing.
So, Neil, it sounds like you're using a provider, the services of a provider that actually does the initial step for you?
That's correct, yeah. I've done these over, I have two. Unfortunately, there's really nobody on island that does this. And actually, some of them that used to be available on the Big Island are no longer. And that's kind of what's prompting me to want to set my own autoclave and little clean room environment up, is so that I'm not reliant on other people. And you know, if they had any type of catastrophe, a fire or air conditioning goes off or they lose power for an extended period of time, you know, all your work can go in one day. So to me, I'd rather control my own destiny. So we're trying to set up our own little mini lab, and we still may use other people,
right?
But at least this way I can control certain aspects of what we're growing.
Nice. I want to let people know, if you just tuned in, this is In the Garden on the Farm. We're speaking with Neil Sams from Orchid Alley, who's describing his forays into micropropagation of orchids.
Yeah, and so 10,000 seeds, that's a lot of combinations of these two parent plants.
That's true. You can you can get quite a bit of genetic diversity, and as a breeder and trying to get the most beautiful orchids, you know, of course the breeder will hand select the best of those. So when you're doing a breeding program, like I'm discussing, say trying to get some pastel shades of yellow bandas, I might take the 10 best out of that 10,000 and keep those and re-hybridize those with something else. Or you can even do it with each other, and that's called a sib cross. And so if you're doing a sibling to a sibling, you will get similar genetic features, but one may be a little bit taller, one may have a little brighter yellow. And so you can take the different features of each one and you can try to get it into a more, even a more beautiful type of an orchid. So almost all of them are beautiful no matter what, but some of them just have these features, or flatness is another, petal flatness is another feature that you try to breed for, because the flatter the flower is, the more aesthetically pleasing it is. So that's something we try to do too.
So now you've described the use of micropropagation for developing hybrids, and you also use it for, or are you looking to use it for, multiplying known varieties that you choose to eventually have as a sale item?
Yeah, because even with those hybrids, if I make 10,000, and I may be keeping the 10 very, very best, the others are still going to be beautiful orchids. And to most people's eyes, there's nothing wrong with them. But only to an orchid expert who's looking at a strict judging system, you know, where you might have a little curl in a petal that would not be offensive to anyone, but to an orchid judge, that might be the difference between getting an award for it and just saying it's a beautiful plant.
Sure.
So it's a little bit different when you're really trying to hit those top extremes. But we also use seed propagation to create, and I'll give you an example of what I created not that long ago, the Angraecum sesquipedale, which is called the Darwin orchid, and it was part of the theory of evolution. And it's from Madagascar, and they're not commonly around. Beautiful orchid, fragrant at night, and Darwin theorized that there must be a moth that would pollinate this flower, because the tendril had 10 inches of length and only nectar at the bottom of it. And so once he passed away, they found the moth with this 10-inch long proboscis that would go down and reach into the flower, and that was how it would propagate. Yeah, cool story, beautiful orchid, not too many around, and I only had one plant. So I selfed that plant and made more by, you know, pollinating it with itself.
Yes.
And so that's a reason where if you don't have many available, you might want to take something and expand its life. In fact, in the wild, there might be situations where there's only one or two or three plants. And to keep that species in existence, the only way you can keep it going is by selfing it or by sib crossing it.
Wow, phenomenal. So I'd like to ask you, Neil, what kind of investment is needed to set up your own lab?
You probably need about a $10,000 investment, because you're going to need an autoclave, you're going to need a HEPA filter, you're going to need sterilization. You're going to need a room with that's clean. You don't want to have a bunch of dust and debris blowing in. And then you're going to need a series of light tables to keep the plantlets artificially lit. The lights are going to go on 14, 15 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And then you also need the jars and the media and all of that. Tweezers and magnifying glasses and all that stuff. So it could add up easily to $10,000 to set up.
Sure, and I guess if you do wind up getting that phenomenal hybrid that's the worldwide prize winner, that seems like a small investment in the big picture of things.
Yeah, you can achieve it by sending out to other people. So there are places to do orchids on the Big Island. You can send them to the mainland as well. But to me, being able to control it myself, I want to do a small run. I want maybe to end up with five flasks, maybe, you know, 250 to 500 plants, and then kind of cherry pick those, where a lot of people who are growing on a commercial basis, they want 10,000, 20,000 plants. And a lot of the people who are doing flasking for people, they have minimum orders of maybe 10 flasks. So if you set your own lab up, you don't have to deal with minimum orders. You can make as many or as few as you want. So that's one of the big advantages of doing your own lab.
Awesome. Well, it all sounds really exciting and geeky and fun, which us plant types just can't seem to stay away from. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how it works out for you, and wanted to find out if you want to throw an invitation out to folks to come visit you at your shop and see what you're coming up with.
Well, they're more than welcome to come to the shop. We're located in downtown Kapa'a. Right next to Mariachi's. We have beautiful orchids there. Right now, this lab is actually in the bottom of our house, where our greenhouse is, which isn't open to the public. So what we would have to do, potentially, once we're set up in the future, we could do some greenhouse tours, and part of that tour, we could include the lab once it's set up. And I've been wanting to do, as part of the tour, where the guests get to experiment with hybridizing an orchid, so we could actually have our guests hybridize orchids, whether or not they become award winners and what happens to them in the future is anybody's guess, but it's it's something that at least they could walk out of there and said that they have had orchid sex, and it's been successful.
Very cool. Well, Neil, thank you so much for taking the time to give us a call in and touching base with us on your botanical journeys. Really grateful.
Oh, well, thank you. It's my pleasure. And yeah, I want to encourage everybody to look into this, and not just with the orchids, with all types of plants. There might be easier ones to deal with than orchids, but it's an area we're lacking on the island, so hopefully we'll see other labs coming, and we'll have more shared knowledge, and it'll be more common on this island.
I sure share that hope with you.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Aloha.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Way cool.
Yes. Well, this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're rounding out the hour here. We want to invite you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibration with Cousin Rich from 1 to 3, 3 to 5. We've got Shaka Kayaka, our faithful engineer for the show, and much wonderful programming following that. But right now, we're going to finish off the show with our Secrets of the Soil Builders discussion on pH, which we had a talk with Joseph Dunsmore just about a year ago, and we want to return to this very important and misunderstood, continue to be misunderstood on some levels by myself, but I'm hoping to be illuminated a little bit and share in the discussion as well.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's kind of baffling to me. I can tell you what I've read about it, but my understanding of it is kind of limited too, although I do know that plants like it between 5.5 and 7.0. The pH scale is, of course, 0 to 14, 7 being totally neutral, anything under 7 being acidic, over 7 being alkaline. Plants like it right in that pocket, just under alkaline, just under neutral, and up to neutral.
And nutrients becoming unavailable when we're in either side of the optimal range. Some of the nutrients unavailable under acidic conditions include nitrogen, that main engine of plant growth, phosphorus, which can be real hard for plants to acquire in Kauai soils anyway without a pH problem. Nonetheless, sulfur, calcium, magnesium, sodium, and molybdenum. And I don't know, maybe Adam Asquith, who's still with us, knows what we're facing if we're on the high end of things, which he is susceptible to in Kalia.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example of the range in pHs that we have on the island. So when on our older weathered soils, particularly like off ag land, where you get up to the slopes of the mountains, right, all the nutrients have been washed away, leaving highly acidic soils. I mean, we have some soils with pHs of 4.5, which is like vinegar. I mean, really, we're talking acid. And you're right, so that ties up. So besides just being low pH, disallows nutrients that might even be in the soil to be available for the plant to feed on. At the other end of the scale, so would be our beach sand. So I remember Auntie Bev Ornelas, before she passed away, she lived down in the Hawaiian homes in Anahola. And typically a lot of those communities are built like Fuji Beach, built right on the old dune system, right? Basically beach sand. Those are highly alkaline. They have pHs of over 8, right? Same way. So basically if you want to grow anything there, you have to do raised beds because almost nothing will grow in pure
right.
beach sand.
Right.
So what we're looking for is the Goldilocks soils, right? Just not too high and not too low.
And we often hear of sulfur being applied to high alkaline soil. Is that something that you've had to resort to in your settings?
I've tried, and I do that a little bit, but it's mostly probably just to like add the sulfur that might be tied up, because when you look the calculations that I've tried, the amount of sulfur you have to add to actually change the pH, to drop it, is just enormous. Mm. I mean, we're talking truckloads. In fact, even the taro farmers in Hanalei have slightly acidic soils, but they still need to bring it up to maximize growth of the taro. So they add lime to the soils. And even at that point, we're talking truckloads. We're talking tons and tons and tons. And this is year after year after year.
Right. And so this is where we go back to giving thanks for having exceptional soils if you have them.
That's right.
Which Adam and the other farmers in Kalia do have. And
very,
when we
very
have nutritious soils, that's where nutritious food comes from, right?
Exactly.
All right. So just if you didn't hear before, just as a reminder, Adam came in today out of his busy farming schedule to let us know about the new Kalia Farm Market, and he's going to give you the details one more time so you can find him.
Again, it's to honor our farmers at Kalia. It's their market, and it's from 3 to 6 every Monday and Friday, Pauhana. Just Mauka of Kalia Beach on Kalia Road. So you just pull off there and look for the big red wagon, and there'll be not only fresh fruits and veggies from our farmers, but value-added stuff, poi and lau lau, whatever the farmers can make with their stuff. So honor our farmers, come by and see what they're growing. Thank you so much.
Mahalo. We sure will do that. I know I will. So that's about all the time we have for. Just one last reminder, we do have the Ag Exposure at KCC, the Go Farm Hawaii program. You can look on the Kauai OSET page, O-C-E-T page, for more information starting up this weekend. The next section of the Go Farm Hawaii program as well, we have the third Saturday work party coming up at the Food Forest this weekend. Please come help us dig big holes for the spring plantings, and we'll have a lot of fun while we do it too.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts Robin and Paul, and we'd like to thank our guests on the show today, Adam and Neil Sams of Orchid Alley. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha, everyone.
Aloha.
Aloha.
So many shall do none. You have got to stand firm. So many shall run. When they rest their head at night, I get no sleep at all. If you listen close to what you see,